Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, welcome back to the Lions 24/7 podcast. Once again, Sean Fitz riding solo. Tyler Donahue at the hospital today. Hopefully good news there, but I don't think he's going to be able to make it on this episode today. Because of that, we are bringing in one of our favorite guests, 24/7 Sports National Recruiting Analyst Brian Doan. Doan is oftentimes welcomed on this podcast. Most of the time is welcomed on this podcast because our listeners like to hear our conversations, which are much more informal than Tyler and I would say, but I think that's why they love you, Doan. That's why I love you, and we appreciate you coming back on.
Yeah, hey, my pleasure. I can't believe I'm one of the favorite. That's a little disappointing.
I think we have this conversation every single time you come on. So
we do.
Yeah, you're among our listeners' favorite. We just had Lamont Payne, Penn State commit 23. So I think it's better for the fans to like the players more than you. So sorry about your luck.
It depends on the game, but yes, I agree with that.
It's a solid point. Solid point. Penn State, of course, 5-1, but you're here to talk recruiting. We haven't had you on for a while. There's been some happenings since then. I think we had you on late in the summer after Penn State went on their massive recruiting run. Now have the number two class in the country in the class of 2022. Been a couple of commits since then. A couple of guys from, not just your region, but you as a Rutgers guy have covered Amari Evans. So we're going to start with the 2022 commits. Andre Roy. Came out of seemingly nowhere. I know this is one where he committed and I was in Wisconsin and I called you and I said, do you want us to run the story? And you were like, what's going on? This one just came out of nowhere. So Andre Roy, let's talk the saga of Andre Roy first, because this is one we thought was trending to Maryland and all of a sudden he's a Penn State commit.
Well, yeah. And I think, he was trending to Maryland and I was at the school, I think maybe 2 days before he committed and he said, at first he was going to commit, I believe, on
it was like a Wednesday.
Yeah. And he says, well, I'm going to delay it. He delayed it. Then he told me, oh, I'm going to wait till after the weekend to commit. And, I was in the Baltimore Harbor Tunnel or whatever they call it. And on my way back from visiting schools in Virginia. And all of a sudden my phone starts blowing up and Andre Roy committed and I had no idea because as Fitz, I'm not going to text and drive. So it took until somebody called me to let me know what was going on. And I'm not surprised because I was on Penn State for a long time. There was a lot of smoke with Maryland. And then there was the talk of, did he visit Maryland the day or two after he committed to Penn State? And I don't know if anybody really nailed that one down yet. Depends who you talk to on whether he visited or not. And I think it's kind of stabilized. Right now I feel good that he'll still wind up at Penn State, but let's see what happens through December. I think, as we tape this, Maryland's last two games were lopsided. And you understand why with Iowa and Ohio State, and you're going to have games like that when you're Maryland and rebuilding. But, I think he really likes Penn State. It was evident when he committed. For a long time, I had Penn State as the crystal ball pick, and I probably flipped it a week before he committed to Penn State. So usually we have these things pretty nailed down. Like I said, I was at the school, and I was pretty comfortable leaving the school that he was going to Maryland. And then, he didn't even ask Penn State for a graphic when he wound up committing to Maryland. So that's where, and I know he had asked Maryland for one. And so that adds to the intrigue of something that I guarantee you is not over.
There's a lot of stuff bubbling on that one just below the surface, and it's been a strange recruitment, no doubt about it. But it's been an interesting one because if you track it, he was one of those guys. Penn State offered a lot of offensive linemen in the class of 2022. Didn't really seem like they pressed the gas. They saw some stuff in the spring that they liked. Of course, they couldn't have him on campus until June, but they saw some stuff in the spring that they liked. The camp that we were at Under Armour looked good at Under Armour. Then you flash forward to the fall, and you're wondering, is Penn State going to take this guy because his tape really didn't match what we saw from that camp circuit. So, yeah. But still, you understand why Penn State took him. I mean, he's got close to 37-inch arms. He's got pretty good feet for his size. Still has to work out the playing football aspect of being a football prospect, but there's a lot to work with there for Phil Troutwine.
Well, and when you look at what Phil Troutwine wants in offensive line prospects, I mean, he fits it. Big, long, has athleticism. I mean, I don't think anybody – I'm sure some people out there have seen the Malik McNeil highlights from the season. You know, I don't think Malik McNeil is the kid that you say, okay, he's ready-made to come in, but very similar body types, long, athletic, move well, can bend, and then you just teach them the technique when they get there. And let's be honest, unless you're one of the top, you know, three or four offensive linemen in the country, usually coming in and playing as a true freshman is a daunting task. So for me, it's really no big deal that it's going to take time for Andre Roy to kind of, you know, tune up his body as far as getting upper body strength a little more, bend a little bit, get some flexibility, continue to reshape his body just so he's a little lighter on his feet. But he's exactly what Phil Troutwine usually wants in offensive linemen. You go back and look what he took at Boston College, and it's very similar. Just guys that have some really good measurables but may not be as far along in the development line in high school as some of the other guys, but I still think he's a really good prospect. I tend to always try to gravitate toward things that I see really good from a kid and not as much as if they're struggling. And Fitz, when you and I saw him at that camp in Baltimore in May, he was fantastic. And like you said, the film right now doesn't match up with what we saw that day, but what it tells you is that ability is in there, and it's up to the coaching staff to get it out of him.
Yeah, and that's one thing that you look at for these offensive linemen across the board is just in the region or whatever you want to call it. There's just not a ton of guys that are ready made. I mean, we saw Landon Tengwall last year was ready made. He has not played a snap for Penn State this year.
Well, I mean, you know, ready made is, you know, not only do you have to be physically able at 18 years old to go against 23-year-old men, but you then have to understand the techniques. You have to understand the protections and what you want to do. By the way, also get used to living away from home in most cases for the first time and do schoolwork, you know. And so there's a lot to entail that entails playing as a true freshman. And then, you know, more than anywhere on the field, the offensive line strength is an issue, and high school strength is different than college strength. Landon Tengwall was really far along, really athletic, and really strong, but he's going against defensive linemen that still have been lifting weights for four more years than him.
Yeah, and that's one thing when you project those guys. I mean, there's just so few. You think about a guy being ready-made, but there's just so few that can actually make that jump, and Tengwall is as close to Connor McGovern or any of those guys that have come in, just not quite there. And I think McGovern, when he came in, of course, had a little bit less in front of him. So that was definitely one. And you're talking, oh, by the way, while we're on Roy, let's talk Malik McNeil highlights. How hard did you laugh at the first one was the touchdown. The second one was the punt. Those were special ordered. He got on those for us. It was much appreciative of those things. But what else did you see in that tape?
Well, I liked the hang time on the punt, too. It was very Reggie Roby-esque, which Fitz, you probably are too young, so Google it.
No, he was a Washington punter for a short time. So,
yeah. Oh, jeez. Well, I'm talking about the good days for Reggie Roby. So, but for me, like, McNeil didn't jump when he punted, or, you know, his foot didn't come off the ground. And so I was really impressed. And what got me was I really hope that kid was okay that he hit on the sideline. And if you have no idea what we're talking about, go into Malik McNeil's profile, go into the latest story I wrote, and the highlights are at the top of the story, because it's just, I mean, it's funny. He's 6'7" playing against a bunch of guys who are like 5'10", and he's just killing them.
Yeah, but it's among the worst competition you'll see on tape. And he just, you wonder how that kid was afterwards, but you also had to question his decision-making before he made that cut straight into Malik.
Can we please cut? Well, he didn't make a cut. He just ran. He should have just cut it back to the inside or ducked out of bounds. I mean, we're talking about longevity here.
Running is a cut for some people. So
that is fair. But no, I think some of the things you look at is, you know, we laugh about that, but to be able to hit a kid in the open field who's like half your size, it does take some agility to do that. And yeah, he's going to need to really work on his technique. He has some defensive line tape where he's running really well to the sideline. So you take the athleticism out of, you know, from that aspect of it. And so there's a lot to like from the athletic standpoint of it. He still has to, you know, the technique has to come along. And you got to remember, he has not been playing football for a while. He first went up to a school in New England as a basketball recruit, and the football coach is like, hey, at least come try football and see if you like it. And, you know, it turned into a good thing for Malik McNeil. And then he did not really have a junior season. So he's got a lot of work to do from the technique standpoint, but it goes to what we talked about with Andre Roy. You know, this kid is legit size, 6'6", 6'7", with length. And I don't care if you have plus length at 6'7". I mean, if you're just, you know, you have your normal length, you're 6'7". And I just think that once Phil Troutwine gets him and develops him in terms of having a kick step and be able to cover the edge and not lean too much on some of the blocks and really learn to sink his hips, I think he could be really good in the run game. I think he's athletic enough from what you watch on a tape that he's a guy that is a left tackle. You could still pull him if you want to. So there's a lot to work with. It's just that, you know, some guys come to campus with, you know, some kind of sculpted clay to them. And Malik McNeil is just like a ball of clay. So there's going to be a lot of work there. To me, check in again when he's a redshirt sophomore, but that still gives you, you know, 3 years with him, and that's what you want with O-line depth anyway. When you mentioned Tangwell not playing as a true freshman, I mean, to me, that speaks well of Penn State on what they've done on the offensive line, that they don't need him to come in and play, because usually if you're coming in to play as a true freshman, you've done something wrong in recruiting before that.
We're going to switch a couple of gears here. Omari Evans, the speedster from Texas, you're familiar with him being, yeah, you know, around the Rutgers program. Penn State adding, you know, I said it at the time he committed, they didn't need another receiver. They didn't need another guy in that room, considering what they've taken so far in 2022. But when you get a chance to get a guy that fast, that's something that they thought really long and hard about and ended up going ahead with. So Omari Evans, what does he bring to the table for Penn State?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. He brings speed, and I don't care how many receivers you have. And, you know, there's talk, did he run a 4.3 whatever down at TCU? You know, at Penn State, they do the handhelds, so he's in the 4.3s from what you hear. Which, look, if you're talking handhelds in the 4.3s, whatever. 4.4s, it's fast. I don't care how you're going to carve it up, it's fast. And his recruiting was a little different in that he's a kid from Sandusky, Ohio, who's now in Texas, and he always wanted to play in the Big Ten. And so it makes sense with Rutgers and Penn State were the two schools, and why maybe the Texas schools weren't on him as much, because he had in his mind that he wanted to go to the, you know, the Northeast or the Midwest, you know, upper Midwest to play. But it goes back to what you said, it's speed. And no matter what happens, you know what I say, you can't teach size, you can't teach speed. So if I'm Penn State and I have scholarships available, well, yeah, I'm going to take this kid, because in this day and age, if things don't pan out, they're, you know what happens in 2 years anyway. But boy, find somebody on the roster who can run like that, and now defenses have to worry about the deep ball. And so it just puts a lot of different stresses on a defense. You can't sag back, because you can hit him with the underneath stuff that he can, you know, turn 8 yards into 80. So there's a lot of things, if you're Penn State, you like about it. And Penn State did a good job of just staying on him. For a long time, it looked like he was heading to Rutgers. But when it got into the season and he did not commit to Rutgers, you just knew he was waiting for something else. You know, there was something else that he was waiting on. Either it was going to be an offer or a green light from a school or whatever. You just knew there was something else he was waiting on, and that something else turned out to be Penn State. And I think that works for both programs, because for Penn State, you're getting a really promising prospect. And for Rutgers, if you got him, you were going to get a kid who wasn't totally all in anyway. So, but from the Penn State aspect, I mean, Fitz, you know the roster better than I do. Who's the guy that runs like that on the roster now?
Well, that's funny, because I was just thinking in this class more, because, you know, you look at what's on there. Parker Washington runs well. He doesn't run that well. Keandre Lambert-Smith, you could say the same thing there. But you look at this class, and Omari Evans ran low 4.3s, 4.32-ish on this. You say handheld, but what it is all these coaches are on the clock, and you will go from lowest to highest, basically average them out. And if you're averaging a 4.32, you know, as Omari told me, his lowest time there was 4.25, then, you know, that's pretty good speed. So you have that, but you also compare them to what you're bringing in 2022. All those guys camped or worked out for Penn State. Caden Saunders, who we widely viewed as the fastest guy beforehand, ran a 4.44 in that same scenario with the watches right on him. Tyler Johnson, 4.47. Anthony Ivey, right around a 4.5. So those guys, very fast, very fast. But Omari Evans just seems to have another step to him.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's the point I was trying to make, is it doesn't matter how accurate the 4.32 is. When you're talking about numbers like that, you're talking about legit speed that defenses now have to worry about, whether you know, you want to run some jet sweeps with them to get them around the corner, whether you want to run some crossing stuff with them, whether you want to throw the deep ball to them. Now, does he have to work on his route running, especially getting out of breaks and being cleaner there? Yeah, without question. But there's ways to utilize him as a player. And to me, if you're going to miss, there's two ways you miss. You miss on size, you know, the 6'7" offensive tackle who maybe doesn't pan out, and you miss on guys that run really fast.
Yeah, and it seems like we just covered both of those guys. So miss big, miss fast, and it's October now. So Penn State's still looking out to close out that 2022 class. The main guy that I've been focused on, I know there's a couple guys still on the radar, but the main guy that I've been focused on is Roy's teammate, Jay Sean Barham, linebacker from St. Francis Academy. This is a guy you've seen in person. I know you loved scouting him in person. Yeah. Very quiet, very standoffish from the process. Was at DeMatha, eventually ended up at St. Francis. So There's a lot of things that would point to Penn State at this point, I would say, but you can't lock it up anywhere. South Carolina, he took an official visit to South Carolina, I think, 2 days after he told you he was not going anywhere, taking any visits. So that's the kind of recruitment this is. Maryland's always been there. Florida might be there as well for an official visit. So there's just so much going on here.
Well, yeah, and I think you know, and I want to make sure people understand, when you said standoffish, that is not a negative way. It's not like he's mean or doesn't want to talk about things or is grumpy when you go to interview him. It's just not his style to do a lot of interviews.
And he's not you when I call you at 8:30 in the morning. Yeah.
And I get back to you at 11:30 when I get up. Yes. But you know, for me with Barham, it's interesting because I know Fitz, you had heard it too, that there was some talk that what Barham said to Roy really led Roy toward Penn State. Right. And it makes sense. Barham was coming off of a visit to Penn State where he was able to see a lot of things, and Roy wasn't there for the whiteout, and Barham was on his official visit. There's a lot to like. Look, if you're a linebacker or even if you're an edge guy, I mean, Barham's perfect for a Penn State recruiting because they can tell him you're either the next Micah Parsons or the next Jason Awe. So, you know, take your pick on
there's a bunch of them out there right now.
Yeah, there are a few. I mean, you know, look at 30 years earlier, maybe more than a little 30 years, but I may be the next Micah Parsons, you know, because of my length and everything. But, but you know, I'm glad you laughed at that
because it's just. Anyway, go on.
It is what it is. But I look at it, and he's a fit in a couple areas for Penn State. And I know he likes Brent Pry. He likes the vibe of the coaching staff. He's a smart kid, so he understands the alumni pipeline, but there's also staying home and playing close to his family, which Maryland offers. And he's been to Maryland a few times, and the South Carolina thing, you know, don't underestimate the Gamecocks. And the thing that they have working in their favor is he's good friends with Marshawn Lloyd, the running back with the Gamecocks, who was a former teammate of his at DeMatha, and they've stayed in contact. And so Marshawn is able to tell him what's going on with the coaching staff, how it's changed there, the culture, and what is needed, and maybe a faster path to the field. Although a kid like Barham, you're figuring no matter where he goes, he's getting on the field pretty fast. And Florida, you know, look, he does not do a ton of interviews. But
can you tell people how tough it is to get an interview out of him? I don't know how much of that is between you and I, but just it's always funny to me just because he doesn't want to talk to you. Let's be honest here.
He does not. And it's not me. He's very quiet and doesn't see the need all the time of why do I have to do an interview? I did one with you. And he was, look, I went down to the game. He was great. I mean, to the scrimmage, he was outstanding. He's like, yeah, I got you after we'll talk. And then I saw him, you know, a month later and he's like, well, we just spoke. What else could I say? And I'm like, well, you were at Penn State on an official visit. And for him, it is not understanding how, you know, I said to him, I said, listen, Jay Sean, whatever school you're going to go to with the NIL, this helps get your name out more and it makes you more popular with fans. I said, fans already like you because they see how you play. And they know what a value you are to whatever program you go to. I said, but this is how you get, you market yourself. And it's just not important to them. And that's okay. And I'm not, that is not a criticism at all. That's okay. Because everybody's different. Lord knows if somebody came and talked to one of my teenage kids and said, hey, we'd like to do this. I mean, you want to talk one word answers. I mean, they'd be the kings of one word answers. But so, you know, so when I was at the school, he's like, well, what else is he going to ask me? We already did an interview about these schools. And it's like, well, we want to talk about the official visit instead. And so I'm going to ask about that kind of stuff. And so he's like, okay, that's fine. And listen, when you talk to him, he is pleasant. He, you know, is well thought with his answers and he's accommodating. It's just that some kids are not into the interviews. I mean, shoot, you want to talk about guys who are not into the interviews. You just look at the NFL and a couple kids that covered like Trayvon and Stephon Diggs. They were not guys that were big on the interviews in recruiting either. And that's okay. I don't hold it against them. I don't say, well, we can't rank them because they're the, I mean, it's who their personalities are. And one thing I always try to do in recruiting is I don't want to bother the kids. I don't want to burden the kids. I don't want to put them in bad situations or uncomfortable situations. And so I understand where he's coming from. And I think as it moves along and as we've talked a few times now, he understands where I'm coming from and how I'm trying to do a job also. And so if I do DM him, he usually will get back. It's not always, but he'll usually get back. So it shows that, okay, he's understanding a little bit more about how to get his name out there. But it's, you know, when you go to St. Francis and you want to interview him, you know, it's not a given that that's going to happen. I think that's the best way to put it.
Very good. Well, we like to do real interviews and get real quotes here. But we've got, you mentioned Marshawn Lloyd as a guy from South Carolina that he has a relationship with at Penn State. He grew up playing with KJ Winston, a guy that's committed to Penn State in the 2022 class. I mean, those are the relationships. And there, I don't think there's a ton of relationships out there that he can lean on for recruiting at the next level, I think is what I'm getting into. So Penn State has some things going for him right now.
Yeah, I mean, you're always talking about familiarity and what makes kids comfortable. You know, people always talk about, boy, the whiteout was great. Fitz, I've been doing this a long time. So have you. Just, you know, just by a show of hands, a show of fingers on your hand, how many times did a kid commit and you said, well, what was the, you know, what led you to commit? Oh, the whiteout. No, that doesn't happen. It's where you feel comfortable. It's where your family, you know, where you feel like family, where you feel like you mesh best with the coaches. And then now that we can visit again with the players who you've spent time with when you're on campus, where do you feel comfortable in the overall picture of things? That's what is important to these kids. And when you look at, you know, KJ Winston commits to Penn State because he feels comfortable with the coaching staff and he likes the vibe on campus and he feels at home. And, you know, Andre Roy, he likes the vibe of Troutwine and the coaching staff. He feels at home. And so with Barnum, it's, do you feel comfortable? And the big thing about getting him on campus for the whiteout, it wasn't that he sees the atmosphere because, I mean, you could show the atmosphere anywhere and make it look good and, you know, talk to a kid about, well, the atmosphere is great, but, you know, that's 6 days a year. But with Barnum, the big thing was when he visited in June, I believe he went up with his brother. When he visited this time, mom went. And that's important because, Fitz, as you well know, decisions rarely get made unless either mom or dad sign off on them and understand what their kid is getting into.
Absolutely. And mom has been prominent throughout this recruitment. I don't think that's a secret for anybody. At that whiteout, Penn State got a commit in the pregame from Lamont Payne, 2023 cornerback from Western Pennsylvania. This is a guy that you and I have talked about a lot, even before he was on the radar on commit watch or whatever. A long corner. We talked to him on the podcast earlier this week. A long corner that really kind of fits what Penn State's doing back there.
He fits what they're doing, and he's like, if you have to draw up what a Penn State kid is, I mean, hopefully everybody watched the podcast and saw what he's about. He's a really smart kid. He's well thought. I just feel like everything about him was Penn State. And yeah, back there, and people are like, oh, what's his ranking? We'll get to it. We got a ways to go before we settle on rankings and everything and really get to see him a little bit more. But when I've seen him in action, he was a kid that can change direction. You know, he can flip his hips. He's got a good frame, good length. He has position versatility right now, as far as I'm concerned, when we get to see frame development. But when you look at what Penn State is doing on the back end, I feel like for a while now they've recruited really well in the secondary, and I think you see that when you watch them play on Saturdays on how many plays are getting made back there or plays not being made by offenses. And so I think he's a smart kid who will work hard, who, giving his skill set, his maturity, his football IQ, his overall IQ, I think he's a kid that gets on the field early for Penn State. He'll find a way, whether it's nickel, whether they drop him into safety for a little bit or play him a corner. I think he'll find a way to get on the field early in his career.
I think so too. And a week later, Penn State got Mega Barnwell back into the fold, a three-star tight end from Virginia, a guy that was Penn State's first commit originally way too soon. Then he opened it up, came back around. That was one that we've been watching for a long, long time. Just a really interesting prospect because I have no idea where he's going to end up.
Well, Penn State.
I have no idea which position he is going to end up. Thank you for stomping on my generalities. So.
Man, that was actually awesome.
You're going to frame that, interesting. That video clip, yeah.
It's interesting because I thought for a long time, and there's still part of me that thinks it, that he's an offensive tackle, right? Long time I've thought that. Watching his freshman tape from Spotsylvania, which, by the way, I think is my wife's favorite town on the East Coast, but from there, where he did a lot of blocking, they didn't throw the ball much. Watching some of his tape as a sophomore, I'm thinking, okay, I still think he's a tight end type kid. Seeing some early junior stuff, I mean, offensive line kid. Seeing some of his early junior stuff, I think he's an offensive line kid. And then I went and met him. And he has the frame of a tight end right now. And he's reshaped his body. Probably about 255, 260. And in talking to him, he's like, listen, we're starting to throw the ball a little more. I also spoke to his coach when I was at the school. Throw the ball a little more, use him more in the passing game. And as the process went along, more and more schools talked to him about tight end. And not talked about, well, that's what he wants to hear talk, but legitimately spoke about tight end to him and his coaches. And look, at the end of the day, I still think he winds up at offensive tackle, but I am not nearly as certain as I was, you know, maybe 2 months ago. 2 months ago, I thought it was a foregone conclusion. I could see him, especially given, you know, he still has a year and a half of high school football to play, but to watch how he develops in the next year and a half will determine whether he comes to Penn State as a tight end and gets a chance there, or as an offensive tackle. I think he's going to start out as a tight end there, to be honest.
Man, that's I've got no idea. And you went down and saw him. Yeah. I've seen him from a distance. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, when you look at his frame, he's got kind of like the V cut now a little bit going on, which is good. And I just feel like he has that kind of size. Look, he's not going to be Mike Gesicki line up in the slot or wide and all that stuff kind of tight end, but he is going to be an inline guy who can get out into a route. If that's the avenue that they choose to travel, I could see that now. And I never would have thought that, you know, he walked into the room and I was like, oh man, you're a lot different than I thought you would be. I mean, his size is legit, wide shoulders. He obviously has the frame to hold 290 to be an offensive lineman or 300, but he does not have to take that path right now.
All right. We'll take your word for it. And also, surprisingly, Spotsylvania, your wife's favorite town. I would have thought somewhere down at the, down on the shore, South Carolina. I know you're big in South Carolina, so.
I am big in South Carolina and on their board too. but no, she just likes, she, I'm not going to torture people here with it, but if you take Spotsylvania and you sing it to one of the Lion King songs, then you'll understand why she has that. And perhaps next year when we're traveling down through that area and she decides to sing it, I'll secretly tape it and throw it on Twitter or something, because I've been married so long that that ain't going to be the thing that puts us over the top.
you're way deeper in than that, but yeah, we can get it on our YouTube channel, get some subscribers out of it. We have chatted since the whiteout, but just a couple of guys that I wanted to highlight in that 2023 class, because they're guys that are very important targets for Penn State at this point, even though it's not an important time for Penn State to push for commits, because they still want to see junior film. They still want to get out, take their time, figure out what they have. But I think receiver is really interesting in this cycle. There's not as many guys on the board as I thought there were. I sat down and kind of wrote these down a little bit earlier, but there weren't as many wide receivers out there as expected. But you throw in a guy like Ronnie Gallagher, who's obviously carries that athlete tag as well, Johnny Shakir from South Jersey, and Kenny Johnson, the wide receiver from Dallas Town. Very interesting prospect that Penn State just offered, and I think a lot of schools have just noticed because he's having a really big junior year.
Yeah, and I think, well, first of all, I think what everybody's surprised is the prep work that Fitz did, right? So before we got on there, he did that prep work, which is what all good guys do, right? So I'll give you kudos for that. I think it's interesting when you're talking about Kenny Johnson from Dallas Town area, and I think he was at York Suburban or something like that beforehand, which I thought was more of a car than a school, but okay.
That's terrible.
It's still early for me, but I look at him and like, if you're Penn State, you can't be offering a kid in state and not want him, right? You have to want him, and he's put up great numbers. They've checked him out. He's got the size. And you know, we talked before about Amari Evans and his speed. And then you have a guy like Kenny Johnson who is more of a big receiver and kind of fits that mold a little bit more. And I think he's really interesting to keep an eye on. And the Shakur kid Pennsauken, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I look at him and I'm like, all right, Pennsauken, he's had a good season. He shows on film what he's supposed to if you're going to be a big-time recruit against that competition. He decided to go up to Penn State for games rather than go to games at in-state Rutgers, so it shows you where his interest level is. And he's a darting kind of receiver. He quick, has the ability to go the distance, but he's, you know, that short space, short area quickness or whatever you want to call it. He's good with that. And then you look at Gallagher. I mean, look, Gallagher's a phenomenal athlete, and he's been offered for football and basketball when you look, you know, from schools. I think long-term football may be the answer because he's 6 feet tall. And if you look at the NBA, I don't watch the NBA religiously, but I know there's not a lot of six-foot guys in the NBA. So you better be really darn special. And maybe he is that. But he's being recruited as a receiver by Penn State. He likes Penn State a lot, so much so that, you know, he's made multiple visits to campus. He's feeling some love from Penn State on the basketball side, which is important. And I think when you look at those three, I think Penn State will wind up with at least one of them. I don't know if they'll take all three. If Gallagher wants to come, they'll take him at any time. And then it just could turn into kind of like a numbers thing. But and that's what Fitz, you and I talk about all the time is, you know, the numbers aspect of it. We talk about with Mega Barnwell at tight end, and then all of a sudden, how many tight ends can you take? And you got Andrew Rappelier up in Massachusetts, and you got Joey Scheffler, you know, at Exeter, and so you know, all of a sudden,
Neo Avery down in Good Counsel, who plays Neo quarterback, Avery, yeah, a heck of an athlete, yeah,
a great athlete who could be either an edge linebacker or a tight end, depending on what school he's talking to. And so now, all of a sudden, yeah, they're not pressing kids to commit, but there's enough depth at several positions to where it can make things happen a lot more quickly than anybody would anticipate.
And you can leverage this class against the next one when you've got whatever, anywhere from 3 to 6 receivers, whatever they're saying with the Penn State's class of 2022, you may only have one spot or two spots available. And that's a short list, especially for guys. You don't want to, you know, overly squeeze guys that are close to you, in-state guys, or you could probably include those Pensacon kids as in-state targets, yeah, as much as they've been up. You don't want to, yeah, squeeze those guys, but at the same time, I mean, it's the numbers are going to be very prevalent at some positions. I think receivers one of them after taking a big class in 2022. Right.
No, I think you want to squeeze them. I mean, when it comes to the right time, you'll squeeze them. Every program does.
But yeah, no, you know. And I get that. But I right now in the fall of
there's no reason to.
Right.
Yeah. There's
right.
No reason to. But once the season's over and we get those big junior days in, you know what, January they'll do it. I don't know if mm-hmm. they'll do one in December. You know, I'm sure people are hoping they're playing in the Big Ten championship game instead. But yeah, I mean, that's exactly what this is about. And they'll set up their board again in the off season. You know, you use, you know, December, January, especially early January to set up your board off of what you mentioned before with junior film. And then you can go out and, you know, what'll tell is who's coming to campus for that 23 class, you know, whether they do something in December or January, that will say a lot. Now, everybody won't be able to make it that they want. And there'll be some kids that come up that, you know, they're still not sure about they'll have to entertain anyway. But for the most part, you'll see kind of like that pecking order of 23 really start to get established some point in January. And you already see it to a degree. It's starting to set up a little bit now, like you mentioned, just with those three in the region. And you know there's going to be more coming. And you know Penn State's going to offer some receiver from IMG that they haven't yet because – you know, they recruit IMG hard, but there'll be other kids that pop up. But yeah, I think you look at it and you can really start seeing how classes can come together more quickly now than in the past.
And I think you can say that there are guys that are on the radar fairly prominently right now that won't be at this time next year. And that's, you know, an evaluation tool. We saw it in the 2022 class, even though it, you know, very different in terms of what you could see when you could get guys on campus and things like that. You were talking, and I don't want to say the kid, but the other day you were talking to a kid that's got a top list and you asked him about his top list and there's some good schools in there and he's still got a really good school on it. And he said, well, I don't hear from them very much anymore. That's just kind of the nature of the beast right now.
It is. And I get it because, I mean, I talk to kids and coaches that the kid will get an offer of the spring of his sophomore year. And they'll be like, wow, they're in kind of late. Like, what? What? In kind of late. I mean,
you've been down in Philly again, haven't you?
No, it wasn't in Philly, to be honest with you. It was a New England kid. But it's interesting to me. It's like, if you like a school, you like a school. I don't care when they offer, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, if you want to buy a car and, you know, you're ready to buy it now and then it goes on sale in 6 months, you're like, well, even though I didn't buy another car, I'm not going to buy that one because it's took too long to go on sale. It's a bad analogy, but you get it.
I would definitely wait for the sale, but that's just me. So, yeah.
Correct. But for me, there's going to be things that crop up throughout the process of more kids getting offered. And, you know, you mentioned that in another year, they won't be on the radar. Shoot, man. I could see them not being on the radar after this week, since Penn State has a bye and can really go through some film and research and everything. I can see where kids that are on the 23 radar today aren't on it next week or next month. That's how quick this stuff works.
Yeah, that's a good point. Full of good points today, Brian Doan. We got to get you out of here and get to some other stuff. But thank you once again for coming on the Lions 24/7 podcast. Always a welcome guest. Always great to speak with you. And you do tremendous work on our site. You can follow him at Brian Doan 247 on Twitter. And of course, he's always lurking around the board. I don't know. You might do another chat here this week or next or something like that. We're always happy to have them because they're a little bit, little less wordy than mine.
They are, but not sure when this is going, but there'll be a chat on Thursday.
All right. Well, check it out. Thanks again, Brian, for joining us. And I'm going to sign off now. This is the Lions 24/7 podcast for Tyler Donahue, hopefully for his new daughter as well. But thanks for joining us in the Lions 24/7 podcast.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.